So I'm going to present my very recent work on chromodynamic fluctuations in the plasma. I consider the plasma, which is weakly coupled, perturbative, color neutral, and I wonder what is the correlation function of electric and chromoelectric and chromomagnetic fields. And at the beginning, let me explain why I find this problem interesting. It is obvious, more or less obvious, that if we consider plasma which is in equilibrium, then the fluctuations are rather small and then not very interesting. But the situation changes dramatically if the plasma is unstable. And then it appears to be that the plasma in the configuration as it is created at the early stage of relativistic heavy ions seems to be unstable. It seems to be unstable because it is strongly anisotropic in momentum space. And then there are unstable chromomagnetic modes. And then we, although at the beginning there was no magnetic field, we generate magnetic fields. And then there is a problem, there is a question, what is the structure of this magnetic field which is generated out of random fluctuations? And why it is important, why this chromomagnetic field of the plasma matters. First, it controls transport properties of such a plasma. And then, such a magnetized plasma can behave as a strongly coupled, even so, the coupling constant is quite small. And a very nice example of such a situation have been recently worked out with Bernd Miller with his collaborators, and inspired by analogous works in electromagnetic plasma, they were arguing that if we have domains of magnetic field in the plasma, then we have a phenomenon called anomalous viscosity. So if there is a particle flying across the plasma and we have certain domains of magnetic field of the size lambda, then it appears that we have kind of incoherent momentum transfer to the particle. So we have momentum transfer as it is required by viscosity, and we have something like anomalous viscosity, which goes like over b square multiplied by this length of the domain. It is very important to realize that if this coherence length, this correlation length lambda is infinite, so we have all plasma in the same field, then we have simply motion in a mean field and there is no dissipation and there is no transport coefficients are formally infinite.
So you're telling me, I mean, if I take your b squared as 1 over g squared, so say you go after an instability, do you wait until it saturates? B squared is 1 over g squared, so the g squared dependence drops out. The lambda, if I would have large correlation length, would go to a very large value. Is it true that the viscosity then would go to zero?
Yeah. Strongly magnetized plasma, it is a well-known phenomenon in electromagnetic plasma, behaves as a very viscous fluid. And what is important also, what one should realize, that when we sum up various components of viscosity, we should sum up inverse as we sum up, as we consider, for example, decay of a particle having several channels, we sum up not the relaxation times, but we sum up rates. And therefore, the viscosity, which is smaller, it dominates the total viscosity. So,
What is anomalous viscosity?
This one, which is associated with the presence of magnetic fields, so which is not collisional.
It's normal viscosity, but it's associated.
Yeah. From the. Here is a bit. It is a bit tricky point because such a plasma is not in local equilibrium. because we have this domains of magnetic field, so it is such a transient state. So I am not sure that it is, such a completely well-defined object, but at least in
plasma physics, people do this.
Yeah. And
do they observe that?
Of course.
Independent of the
company? Yeah. And also, yeah. And diffusion is also reduced, and heat conductivity.
And again, they observe that it's independent of the coupling?
No. This I haven't said. I simply said that they observe that strongly magnetized plasma behaves as object with small values of transport coefficient. This I only want to say.
So I'm a bit confused about, so if you set lambda to infinity, there's only one domain.
Then it goes to zero.
Then eta goes to zero, and this means that this eta totally, then total eta is also zero, irrespective of what happens within the domain.
Yeah. I would rather send you to this paper by Bernd Miller. I only wanted to, this as I use only as a motivation to say that these magnetic fields matter for transport properties. I would like to enter this calculations, which are pretty complicated.
I have another issue in this inverse viscosity. If you, let's say, in a neutron star, you have viscosity, let's say you have contributions to viscosity from nuclear interactions, and this viscosity is very small, I mean, because mm-hmm. it affects the size of ranges of interactions very short. But then you have viscosity associated with neutrinos. Neutrinos have very long mean-free paths, and then in the end, the neutrinos produce the dissipation.
So I think they should be, I believe they should be summed up in such a way as inverse.
But the viscosity associated with dissipation is large. If you combine the two, you don't combine them as inverses, because if you combine them as inverses,
okay,
you say it's the nuclear, which is the most important.
As I look through, not very carefully, I must say, plasma literature, it is done in such a way.
Okay.
But as I said, this is...
It can't be the correct answer mm-hmm. anyways, because there's one Kubo formula, okay, this is not local equilibrium, and from that you get the viscosity, and that's the answer.
So I would rather say that this anomalous viscosity, we should also remember this is not a local equilibrium state, so I would rather say that it mimics viscous, very viscous behavior. I wouldn't like to enter details which I don't quite know.
It's a small viscosity.
Small viscosity. Okay. So now I was thinking it is an interesting problem, and here is crucial what is the structure of magnetic field in the plasma. And then I looked through many handbooks of plasma physics, and I found that in most cases, fluctuations around equilibrium state are considered, or at least equilibrium or fluctuations around stable states. Much less is known about fluctuations around non-stable, unstable configurations. It will be clear later on why it is so. But at the end, I found a very nice method, which was developed in the papers by Klimontowicz and Silin, Rostocker, Cytowicz. And there is very nice presentation of this method in Landau-Lifshitz series of handbooks in this volume number 11, Physical Kinetics. However, only very simple cases considered there, only longitudinal electric field in stable systems. So then to learn the method, I considered a quite general case of fluctuations of electric field in the plasma, in electromagnetic non-relativistic plasma, and then to my surprise I didn't find such analysis in plasma literature. However, I spent quite some time looking through these papers. So I decided to publish a paper about electromagnetic fluctuations. However, I am not really convinced that it is original. But for me, it was kind of exercise, and just to complete it, I decided to publish it, because it also appears that it is not so obvious how to infer this electromagnetic formulas from my chromodynamic formulas for several reasons. Okay, And then I considered chromodynamic fluctuations, which I'm interested in. And now the method uses kinetic theory, so let me spend some minutes explaining how it works. So, but first of all, I should strongly stress, I consider weakly coupled quark-gluon plasma, perturbative quark-gluon plasma. Coupling constant is small. For this reason, I have well-behaving quasi-particles. And now, but what is important that my distribution functions of quarks and anti-quarks are matrices in color space, and they are gauge-dependent. What is also another simplification, I assume that my quasi-particles are on a shell, so there is well-defined and defined energy. And as I said, the distribution function is gauge-dependent. What has very simple physical interpretation, that it doesn't make much sense to ask what is the probability to find a quark in a given moment of time, in a given location, with given momentum, and given color, because you can change color by gauge transformation. So the reasonable question is to ask to find a quark of any color. So it means we must take a trace, and then the trace of the distribution is obviously gauge independent. And then we have so quarks live in fundamental representation, gluons in adjoint, so the matrix is bigger. And quite a long time ago, it was clarified what are the how the transport equations look like. So they are quite similar to the standard transport equations in electromagnetic plasma. There are, of course, some obvious differences to comply with gauge covariance. So we have covariant derivatives. And also, since we deal with matrices, it was not difficult to guess that we must symmetrize the product of strength tensor F and this distribution function. And on the right-hand side, we have collision terms. And as I said, we quarks and anti-quarks live in the fundamental representation, and the transport equation for gluons is in adjoint. And now these equations are supplemented by the Young-Mills equation describing self-consistent generation of the fields. And now, very important remark, I will work in the collisionless limit, and why it makes sense. Well, if we consider time scale of processes which are driven by parton-parton scattering, then you find that the characteristic scale of the process, which is driven by hard collisions. Hard, it means that the momentum transfer is comparable to the quark momentum itself. Then we find that the scale is 1 over g square t. If we consider soft scattering, so the momentum transfer is gt, then there are two powers of g less, so this process is faster. However, when we consider collective phenomena, something like growth of instability, then it appears that the characteristic time scale is 1 over gt. Therefore, provided g square is very small, then we have certain hierarchy of time scales. So the slowest are hard processes, soft, and collective phenomena are the fastest. Of course, it only works if the coupling constant is really small. But I assume it is. And then
you just find in the initial instabilities, in the formation of the instabilities, so you're not interested in the long-time evolution of instabilities.
I cannot do it simply with this scheme I will develop. It will be, there will be neglecting collision terms is only one reason, as you will see. And now, what I should do? Now I will consider only quarks. And what I should do, I should solve transport equation together with Young-Mills or simply Maxwell, non-abelian Maxwell equations with the charge density and current density controlled by the distribution function. It is completely well known.
Why not anti-quark?
Then I will show there is a simple rule how to include anti-quarks and gluons. So I simply, for simplicity, not to to all the time to play with one equation, not with three. But in the paper, I have more space, so I all the time from the beginning I keep quarks, antiquarks, and gluons. And now, what is actually done? So I assume that I have stationary and homogeneous colorless state. So these are color indices in fundamental representation, and this means that this state is colorless, and it is also stationary and homogeneous. I see that there should be bold P. And now I consider a small fluctuation, and of course I assume that this fluctuation is much smaller than the background distribution function, and I assume that the same holds for momentum derivatives. And now, very important, I play with perturbative plasma, so I assume that also all fields and potentials are of the order of this small fluctuation. So I exclude all phenomena, interesting phenomena like Savity vacuum, or when we have actually strong fields, and I also assume that the gauge potential can be gauged away to zero. So I work in such a trivial perturbative vacuum. So once it is done, then I can linearize my equations, completely standard procedure, and one can say, well, it is a bit disappointing because the problem is now fully abelian, so everything interesting has been thrown away. But it is again also rather standard procedure. We play with this, and then guided by gauge covariance, we usually can restore dominating non-abelian contributions simply to comply with gauge covariance. However, it will appear that this step, then checking what is the gauge dependence of the results, in my case appeared very trivial. So now I converted everything to essentially electrodynamic-like problem. However, there is one funny thing, that the system of units which is used for QCD is very rarely used in electrodynamics. It is these units which are here, if it is treated as electrodynamics, the system is called Heaviside-Lorentz system, because you see there are not this 4 pi, which usually appear in Gauss system of units, which is commonly used in plasma physics. Okay, and now, since I'm interested in initial value problem, I must assume that there are initial conditions. So I assume that all these perturbations have initial values. And now I will convert my differential equations into algebraic equations by means of Fourier transformation. But when I deal with time, it is called one-sided Fourier transformation or Laplace transformation. And then it means that when I make inverse transformation, then I should actually use the contour integration to get time dependence. Yes, these are all standard things. Now I, using this transformation, I convert my equations. And what is nice feature of Laplace transform, that the initial conditions show up in the equations. So once you solve them, then you also have initial conditions in your problem. So I apply the transformation, and now I must say quite hard work starts. Because first you solve your transport equation, very simple solution, but it is not a real solution because there are these guys, electric and magnetic field, which also should be determined from the equations. So first you start with transport equation. And then you construct the current directly from the definition. You put your solutions here. You put your solution here. Now you eliminate magnetic field using Maxwell equation. And also you observe that there is a quantity which appears here, is the dielectric tensor. And with this input, you can express current only through electric field and these initial conditions. And then a bit more manipulations are needed. You use once again a Maxwell equation. You combine Maxwell equations, you get such an expression, and you here plug in the current. And it is the final result of all this work. And it is solution of the problem. However, the solution is only implicit, because here with this this highlighted part is, as you see, is a matrix. And there is a problem how to invert this matrix to get explicit solution of electric field. And how it can be done. So in general, I'm afraid it's not possible to invert this matrix, because this depends on your distribution function. So depending how on the distribution function, this has different structure. However, in real life, if you assume certain symmetries of distribution function, you can see that some elements vanish and it is doable. In general, however, it can be inverted if your system is isotropic. If your system is isotropic, then your dielectric tensor has only two components, longitudinal and transverse, and then the matrix can be inverted. So to see how the method works, I considered in great detail isotropic plasma. And then what happens in isotropic plasma? So the solution has such a structure. There is electric field, which depends on initial values of magnetic field, electric field, and initial value of distribution function. So we must apply the matrix, and we have the solution. Now, when we now take product of these two, take ensemble average, we get the distribution function. And this expression is pretty awful, I must say, because we have all possible combinations of these initial correlations. Initial correlations of distribution functions, of distribution function at electric field, with magnetic field. So if you have quarks, anti-quarks, and gluons, it is horrible expression.
How do you find your statistical ensemble? Is that your initial conditional ensemble?
Yeah. This averaging will be performed in the case of your initial fluctuations explicitly. You will see it. And now, what is important that it is this correlation function is sufficient to obtain all electromagnetic quantities of interest. So if you have electric field, then you know how to get magnetic field, charge density, charge current. You simply manipulate Maxwell equations and you get magnetic field, charge, current. So it is completely sufficient to have this one correlation function and all others can be obtained. And now, very important, now we go to this, can say your question. What is this guy? What are initial correlations, and I will spend some time with it. So here I wrote explicitly color indices because now they matter. Now there is very important assumption. It is assumed that the initial fluctuations correspond to the fluctuations in the system of free quarks. So you can imagine I have free quarks, and in such a system there are correlations. And there is well-known formula of these correlations. And what is important, the physics here is very transparent. So why the correlation appears? The correlation appears if we are interested in the correlation between these two space-time points, TR and T prime R prime. And the correlation is non-zero if there is the same particle, for this reason there is this delta here, which flies from this point to this point with its own velocity in such a way that these points are connected by trivial equation of motion. So this is
one might wonder, is this consideration important? Because one would think that if you have a system, there will be some noises. You will get every one of them at some point will be non-zero, and what's important is just the eigenvalue structure of this of this inverse matrix that multiplies it, and then all of this might or might not be important then.
It appears it is. And this is what makes this physics quite interesting, that in the case of stable systems, initial fluctuations are forgotten. For this reason, it doesn't much matter what is the initial fluctuation. But if we have unstable system, some modes are amplified, and then it matters what you assume for initial conditions.
But if that amplification matrix has some gross modes, then they will be populated no matter what you consider.
No, but it's important that you need these seeds for the beginning to amplify them.
It's probably, the details of the initial conditions are washed out immediately if you have an exponential growth.
Yeah.
So what you finally need is very general, like anisotropy.
But it's important to have these fluctuations for the beginning. If you don't have, you must first wait to appear.
This is classical because it's.
It is purely classical. But
in
this
theory,
I.
Theory, you would put plus one.
I will show in a moment. So, this can be easily guessed. This formula, except this color structure, which at least for me was not obvious. And it might look funny, but I use the whole machinery now to derive this quite simple formula. Presumably it can be done in a simple way, but I didn't know how to do it. Since I am familiar with Kelde-Schwinger formalism, I used the whole machinery to get this simple formula. And the procedure, at least the beginning, is very standard. So you define these green functions, these Whiteman green functions, and then with help of them, you can define average distribution functions. Actually, there should be theta functions here in front that are missing. Okay, so it is standard way to define distribution function. The system must be sufficiently smooth. And then you define the quantity, this what you would call exact distribution function or microscopic distribution function, and you ask what is the difference between these two. But you don't really calculate this quantity, but you only compute the second moment. And then this construction tells you how to express this distribution, this correlation of two distribution functions through field operators. And now what is important, I play here with scalar fields, but it can be done also with spinor fields, but then there's also a problem with spin degrees of freedom that I am not interested in. So now this indices, I, J, K, L, are for me color indices or any internal indices. So I am able to express this through field operators. And now another a bit funny step, because again, I use huge machinery to compute something relatively simple. The problem is how to compute the expectation value of such a product of four operators. And what is important, you would like not to constrain the time values of each of argument. And then how to do it to apply weak decomposition. And there is a more or less standard trick. You introduce a contour of such a form, and every argument is on one of the four branches of the contour. Therefore, every time can leave from minus infinity to plus infinity, and nevertheless, the operators are ordered according to the position along the contour. And then, once having such a formal construction, you then know how to apply weak decomposition in the lowest order, and you get simple expression.
What is the sense of going back in between? Why not taking?
Because you want this quantity to be known at any values of time arguments. So how to do it, not spoiling ordering, and you know that the weak theorem deals with ordered product.
You could have taken ordering where these intermediate the part from T max to T min, this intermediate curve, just flip it to the other side, you would get the same answer. It's
But what is important that when you think how it is, then the quantity, you have here this Wigner transformations. So you perform integration along all times, and then you mix up the ordering. So to prevent it, I put the argument on the contour.
Yeah, but you could have taken any contour. The result would be independent of it. That specific contour going back and forth, did it matter?
For me, I believe it does, because this is, you know.
Is it just for showing a big theorem?
Yeah, only this. I was looking through literature, and there I found some derivation, and I found very unconvincing how people were argued that this decomposition, that here you have this ordering, this f psi star psi with this conjugate, non-conjugate, but here there is, you have opposite ordering. And I was wondering how people were able to get it. And I must say, I started to suspect that they guessed what should be the result. And I wanted to have a, you know, unique prescription how to do it. So I used this machinery, but presumably it is kind of overdoing when you play with free fields. But actually, the only reason I went through this procedure, I wanted to understand what is the structure of these color indices, because the rest I could guess even without any derivation. And with these color indices or spin indices, it was not that obvious for me how to do it. For this, I applied the machinery that I understand, and it gives unique result, and I'm more or less happy with this. However, I think it is maybe not the shortest way. For this reason, I put all this in the appendix to my paper. Okay, and so here it is expressed through two-point functions. So once I, and my two-point functions I express through distribution functions, therefore I get the result which is expressed through this distribution function. And as you see, since I assume that my fields are bosonic, then I have this 1 plus n amplification factor you mentioned. And now when you, and then for you take classical limit of this formula, and you should take into account two aspects. In the classical limit, you assume that your particles fly at a distance which is longer than 1 over its de Broglie wavelength. So if it is much longer, then effectively in this integral, you assume that Q, that you perform integration over, is small. And the second assumption is that your modes are not too much populated. Your particles don't fill then statistics, and then you get such a formula. If you relax the second assumption, then you here have a multiplication 1 plus n. So now I have my final formula. And this allows me to compute all my initial fluctuations. So if I am interested in initial fluctuations of my distribution functions, I get simple structure. Then manipulating Maxwell equations, I can get all correlations I need, like correlation of initial distribution function with electric field, with magnetic fields, and so on. So all this, now it is simple exercise to derive all the distribution initial fluctuations you need. And there are many. Maybe I will return for a moment. You see, you need all of them to get your correlations. So I went through all this. Okay, now I'm ready to complete the program. I had the transparency. It was not needed to go back. So now I plug in these initial correlations into my formula, and I consider isotropic system to don't have problems with inverting the matrix I mentioned. And now what is the structure of the result? The structure is the following. So what is important here, we see that you have this delta function of color indices. So it is remnant, it tells me, it appears because I consider my background state is colorless. Then I have this delta. This delta is responsible for translational invariance of my system. So my system in what concerns positions in translationally invariant. And now I have this integral, and structure of this integral is pretty complicated. And there are now what is important that this function has three types of poles. First, there are poles positioned at collective modes. So collective modes correspond to poles of the function, longitudinal and transverse. And there are also particles which I call them particle wave resonance. These poles appear when there is a particle which moves with the velocity equal to the phase velocity of the field. It is important because if there is such a particle, then such a particle which moves with velocity equal to the phase velocity of the wave feels the electric field which oscillates as a constant field. For this reason, such a particle is either accelerated or decelerated. So we can say that because of this pole, appearance of this pole tells us that there is energy transfer between particles and fields. And it is actually the mechanism which, even in collisionless plasma, allows for equilibration of the fluctuation spectrum. And now, let me complete the program. So I will compute the correlation function in the coordinate space. I would like to know how it behaves in time and space. So I have to perform this inverse transform, something like inverse Laplace transform. I perform integration along the contour. First observation is that because of this delta, my correlations are translationally invariant. This is the first message. And now, time dependence is much more complicated. And it depends which poles are taken into account. And what is important that we collective modes are damped. So collective modes in isotropic system are damped, and they are located in the lower half plane of this imaginary. They have negative imaginary part of the frequency. While these poles related to the particle wave resonance have zero imaginary frequency and they are on real axis. Therefore, it appears that the structure of this expression is such that poles related to the collective modes exponentially decay. These contributions related to the poles of collective modes exponentially decay, while this poles related to particle wave resonance provide the correlation function, which is invariant with respect to translations in time. And now if you go to the sufficiently long limit that you allow this exponentially decaying modes to disappear entirely, then the only contribution which is important are the contribution related to the two poles of this particle wave resonance. And then you see that in such a case, your correlation function is translationally invariant, not only in time, in space, but also in time, as is seen here. And you get the fluctuation spectrum. And what is nice, you see that this spectrum has a peaks positioned at the collective modes. And one step further can be done. When you consider equilibrium system, then you can observe that expressions which are here can be expressed through imaginary parts of the electric function. And then at the end, you find very nice expression, which tells you that the fluctuation spectrum is proportional to the imaginary part of longitudinal and electric part, and it has peaks coinciding with collective modes of the system. And this formula can be obtained in several ways, but it is quite simple, I would say, to get this formula if you assume that the system is in equilibrium from the beginning, and you only take into account this stationary part of the spectrum. However, I haven't found such a derivation which shows how exactly it happens that the stationary spectrum establishes. For this reason, I decided to collect my notes and to publish a paper on this electromagnetic counterpart of the problem. So this can be done for electric field, and once we have electric fields, then it is one can easily obtain also analogous formula for magnetic fields, which is much simpler because magnetic field is pure transverse, so there are no longitudinal, there is no longitudinal contribution. Okay, so it was simple. I essentially reproduced in a quite painful way results which are known, but what I am really interested in is unstable system. And until today, I was only able to play with a relatively simple system, and I considered only longitudinal electric field in the unstable system composed of two streams. So if I have such two interpenetrating streams, then I know that there is unstable mode, and this unstable mode appears because you have phenomenon, kind of inverse phenomenon when compared to Landau damping. You transfer energy from particles to wave, and it grows. And this mode, and there is a longitudinal, it is longitudinal mode. And then when you compute the correlation function, you find that the structure is very, very different. There are, because the structure of poles is now different, we have collective modes which are in the upper half plane of frequency.
Do you mean the upper brackets, this delta 3p minus q plus delta 3p minus q? You must have some one direction.
Which formula?
I think this is just a typo in the first formula.
Oh, yes, of course. There should be plus here. Sure, there should be plus to have two. Yeah. Okay, and what is the structure of the expression? So we have many contributions, and there are contributions originating from this stable mode, which are not very interesting because they simply exponentially decay. The most interesting is this contribution which is due to unstable modes, and I pick up it here. And what you see? You see that if your system was initially translationally invariant, it remains translationally invariant. So the instabilities don't damage, don't destroy translational invariance. But what concerns time, the structure is very different. We see that we have exponential growth both in the sum and in the difference of arguments. So you would say that the fields exponentially grow, and even the points which are separated, the electric field in the points which are very much separated in time are still very much correlated. So I think that this is quite generic structure in the case of unstable systems.
Could you say what you said? It's an inverse Landau damping.
Yeah.
Could you say a few more words about this? Why do you?
Because I have classical picture of Landau damping, rather different than that Miko used. So for me, what is the Landau damping? We have a particle which moves with the velocity equal to the phase velocity of the wave. And if there is electric field, such a particle feels this electric field as a constant. So then it is either accelerated or decelerating depending on the relative sign. And And then you can show that if your momentum distribution monotonously decays in all directions, so you have only one peak distribution, then you can show that there is net effect, that there is always energy transfer from wave to particles. And this is damping. But if you have a multi-bump structure, so you have, for example, and then when you have such a piece of momentum distribution, or velocity distribution, let it be velocity. And for this window of velocities of particles, what is important here, velocity grows and the number of particles also grow. And then modes with phase velocity from this window are amplified. If someone is interested, it can be shown in a very simple physical argument why it happened. Okay, so this is Landau damping for me. And so Landau damping is the energy transport from field, from wave to particles, and instability appears when the opposite process wins. But you always have both. Okay, and that's essentially everything what I wanted to say. So, no. First,
Can you build some simple picture, like what happens, like
with this?
Charges?
Of course, if you have, since it is longitudinal mode, then via Maxwell equation, you know that you generate charges, local charges, because. So you have something like charge separation. So initially the system was locally neutral, mm-hmm. and due to fluctuation you generate color charges or
but
electric you charges.
Have a picture like where, what, or
no, I think it can be. No, this is quite elementary physics. It can be guessed how it goes.
On the table top electrostatic instability of. Let's say where there's movement of nuclear matter is, I think it's called Wimper's machine. You have drops which drip down and you bring in some wire and instability develops where your container with the fluid becomes highly charged, either one sign or another.
But these are instabilities of this type, this so-called kinetic.
Well, it's instability where you have a movement of neutral matter, the drops going down from a can, and you do it with a can. This
okay.
Experiment. I think it would be useful if you had such an analogy.
I think it is another category of instabilities. In plasma physics, they are called hydrodynamic. Because they are due to lack of equilibrium in coordinate space. You have presumably important role of edges of your drops. Yeah. So I think it's a different story. Okay, so now I would like to complete with two very quite important remarks. First, I played only with quarks. And then when you carefully go through it, appears there is a very simple rule how to switch, how to include anti-quarks and gluons. Actually, if you take into account quantum statistics, which is different for quarks and gluons, then the rule is more complicated. Because in some expressions you must put only this, but in some you should take factors which take into account effect of quantum statistics. So these factors 1 plus minus n show up. So, but in my classical picture, it is sufficient to have to take into account anti-quarks and gluons. And now, very important remark, which I have forgotten. What about gauge? It looks pretty bad at first glance. Now we have such a generic structure of how my correlation function is like this, and I have two fields which transform in such a way. Therefore, if I perform transformation of my correlation function, it looks pretty bad. I have two extra terms. However, what I really computed, I computed my correlation function around colorless background. Therefore, there is very trivial color structure, which shows up through this Kronecker delta. And then it appears when you apply the transformation to such a simple structure correlation function, you see that if you sum over, if you take trace, then the quantity is gauge invariant due to anti-symmetry of structure constants. So I was very much surprised at the beginning, I must say, that at first I thought that I will get very ugly result, and then I thought it will be needed to add something non-trivial to comply with gauge covariance. But at the end it appeared trivial. So my distribution functions are after taking trivial sum over the scalar indices, are gauge.
Is it the only gauge invariant two-point function that you have? It seems to be a singleton, not even octet.
No, of course I have the. The reason is that I have colorless background. This is essential. Once I have it, then my expression is perfectly gauge invariant. So it makes sense. Even so, at the beginning, I thrown away all non-abelian contributions. So I believe that all this makes sense. And here are my conclusions. So first, it's kind of obvious that there is a method which allows to compute fluctuation spectra in stable and unstable plasma. And now I try to do what I'm really interested in. I would like to compute correlation function of magnetic fields in the unstable plasma in such a configuration which is relevant for phenomenology. And it means momentum distribution should be anisotropic, and then such a plasma is unstable. So that's all.
Yeah. The collective part, I'm not sure about the particle fields coupling. I mean, this is what people calculate all the time, isn't it?
No, they don't compute this correlation function, but such unstable systems are, of course, simulated. And we see many beautiful structures, which, for example, color currents appear. So
it is. We certainly calculate these type of correlation functions, sampling over the initial. In the way you do it. This is what we talked about, using the sample over initial conditions. This is just taking the two-point function of an A.
Okay, but you
field.
Yeah. So it appears in some simulations, but I don't think that people have carefully analyzed what is the structure of this object. But of course, in numerical simulations, it is not a problem to get it.
This is the last talk.
The one remaining standing organism.